You're guaranteed two things in life, death and taxes. Now, while taking care of your physical and mental health can lead to a longer, healthier life and stave off the death part, what can you do to legally minimize your tax? Since everyone wants to pay less tax come tax time, in today's podcast, I chat with independent financial advisor Stuart Weems about what options are available. Whether you're self-employed, whether you're in your own business or a PYG taxpayer, Stuart's got some suggestions for you, particularly if you're a property investor. So welcome to today's podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
When asked about his company's tax minimisation scheme, the late media magnate Kerry Packer said, "Of course I'm minimising my tax. And if anybody in this country doesn't minimise their tax, they want their heads red. Because as a government, I can tell you they're not spending it that well and we shouldn't be donating extra to them." So, if the wealthiest people in our country minimise their tax, how can you legally minimise your tax? That's the topic I'm going to discuss today with Stuart Weems, an independent financial advisor and an author, because he's recently written a great blog outlining his thoughts. So welcome, Stuart.
Great to be back with you again, Michael. Thank you for the invitation.
Now, Stuart, before we delve into this topic, I think it's important to start with a disclaimer, because even though you're an accountant and you're a financial planner, what we're going to discuss today is general information. It's not specific advice. At the end of today's show, Stuart, I'm going to give people information where they can get more advice from you so they can get more specific information. But Stuart, let's look at the big picture. Tax isn't necessarily a bad thing. No one likes paying it. But if you're paying it, I guess it means you're making money.
Yeah, and the only way to not pay tax is to not make money. So there's your two options. You know, it's a necessary consequence of building wealth or generating income. Either way, if your tax rate is less than 100%, you're still moving forward, even though you're giving away some now. But as Kerry Packer said, he's bang on. You know, there's no point donating more than you really need to. And then with a bit of forward planning and a bit of forethought, typically it's a small amount of time invested at the beginning of an investment journey helps people sort of minimize tax along the way.
Oh, I think that's a great point, that actually it's part of the strategy that I know you as a holistic advisor give to your clients and we at Metropole do as well. Property investment is a long-term game, so you have to have an asset protection strategy, a tax strategy, a finance strategy, a property strategy. So it's all part of the mix. But tax, while it's got its role, shouldn't be the main reason you invest or not invest. Stuart, I found over time people just get a bit too hung up with it. Oh, I don't want to buy more properties. I don't want to pay more land tax. Oh, I can't afford to buy another property because I'm going to earn more money and pay tax.
Becoming too tax-focused will have you make mistakes and miss opportunities, I think. You certainly deserve some amount of focus, but not overly too much. I mean, really, at the end of the day, you should be focusing on maximising your wealth and income on an after-tax basis. And so tax is one element, but there's also other many elements that you can optimise or increase or improve apart from tax to maximize your wealth after tax. So you're right, Michael, becoming too focused on tax is ridiculous, because there's only so much you can do, so many steps you can take, and then beyond that, it's wasted energy.
Sure. So you said one of the focuses should really be on maximizing profits, but I think another one has to be minimizing risks.
Well, returns and risk go hand in hand, and that's the thing that I find that a lot of investors fail to do. They focus on the returns, and often the returns only, whether they're good or bad returns, and then make a decision based on that. But at the end of the day, you must be rewarded adequately for your risk. So what's the point of taking a massive risk and only getting an 8% return, for example? To my mind, I would never pursue something like that. But if I can get a 10% return while taking very, very little risk, to me, that seems like a fantastic investment opportunity. So they absolutely must go hand in hand. And the same with tax planning. You know, if I can save $200 in tax, but I've got to really, I won't say bend the law, but stretch the law or take additional risk, then it's just not worth it. Why would I attract the ATO's attention? Because once you do that, then your chances of getting audited again down the track are just too high. And I don't need that. I don't need that hassle. I'd rather pay the extra couple hundred dollars in tax, stay within the black letter of the law. If I get an audit, there's not going to be any questions about what I've claimed as deductions or claimed as income, and I can go on my merry way and keep life very simple. So when contemplating a tax planning strategy, because there's lots of different accounting firms and some very reputable accounting firms, their business model is to make things more complex. And they do it under a guise of saving tax. And I'm being a little bit sort of negative here or skeptical, but really at the end of the day, it's their business model. They charge a lot of fees to structure things a certain way to create some complexity that ultimately is justified because it's going to save you tax. And then as soon as the ATO cottons onto it, or there's a small change in law or a court case, then you've got to go then unwind it all again. And then you've got to pay a whole nother bunch of fees to do that. To my mind, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, sometimes complexity is unavoidable and it's necessary, and that's fine. But in a lot of times, a lot of situations, it's unnecessary, and really it's driven by accountants and lawyers wanting to generate a fee income.
Well, before we delve into some ways of minimizing your tax, I think the other point I'd like to make is don't cheat. It's not worth it. So it's confirming what you've just said. We know the ATO's got some very sophisticated models now of understanding what your income is, where you're spending elsewhere. Various departments talk to each other, or the computers do, and they're carefully looking at the returns. And if yours is out of the ordinary, they'll look at you. Now, interestingly, Stuart, over the years, and I think the last time was about 15 years ago, and there was one before that, I've actually had two tax audits. Very stressful. By the way, nothing wrong. I was able to go into those knowing that we hadn't done anything wrong or cheated. And for that reason, I felt very, very comfortable. But still, it was emotionally stressful. Fortunately, it was all just having to deliver some documents, and I was able to justify all the claims we'd made.
It's a stressful and time-consuming process. And sometimes, no matter how good our record keeping is, you know, sometimes you might miss something here or there. You don't have that bank statement, or you know, you couldn't remember what the elements of the cost base, or you couldn't verify how much you paid in buyer's agent's fees for this particular property. These small little things, like, they're solvable. You can go and find that information, but you certainly don't want to attract it. So I think pay your fair share of tax. Don't be silly about it. Take every opportunity to minimize it if it's very clear and clean way of doing it, but focus then on maximizing your investment return.
I think the other point was it was an expensive exercise because the accountant had to do a lot of forensic work to make sure. Despite that, we keep very good records. So I think that's another hint I'd like to give, that keep meticulous records. But since then, I've had tax audit insurance, which I think all accountants offer their clients, and have never needed to use it again. And I'm very happy I haven't.
Yeah, it's like any insurance, Michael. As soon as you have it, whatever risk you're insuring against will never occur again.
So I know one of your principles is that maybe you can't avoid tax, but you could delay it. And that's not a bad idea because you've got use of your funds in the meantime.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of tax saving mechanisms really just aim to delay tax rather than avoid it. Because at the end of the day, if you make a profit, whether it's a capital profit or an income profit, it will be taxed. There's very few avenues in order to avoid tax in totality. So sometimes delaying it is worthwhile. Other times it's not. Other times all you do is compound the impact of delaying it. And in the long run, in the short run, you save some tax, but in the long run, you end up paying more tax. So it's really about understanding the scenario. And that sometimes if we're approaching retirement, delaying tax is a really good avenue to do that, because once you're retired, that's when you're happy to take some of that sort of those tax liabilities on because you don't have the employment income and so forth. But other times it's not worthwhile. And then we could also take a really holistic view too, Michael. I mean, I might be able to save a little bit of income tax, but if that gives rise to paying a lot more capital gains tax down the track, then I want to balance these things out as well. So being too focused on just one element of tax, like income tax, and being too short-term focused, just like it is with investing, ends up costing more in the long run typically.
So what I got from what you just said was that while you're working, if you can minimize your tax, that would be useful, because if you delay it till a time when you don't have as much other income coming in, it could be beneficial. Of course, if they take your advice and my advice and build a cash machine from their shares and their property portfolio, hopefully they're going to have as much income once they stop their real work anyway. But I think you're suggesting look at different stages of your life and do different things.
And different strategies for different people. So PAYG employees, for example, don't really have a lot of avenues to minimise their personal income tax in respect to that employment income. But as you say, if you want to create, or you should be creating a cash machine, then really your focus could be on making sure that you pay as little tax as possible on investment income. And really, if we can save tax on investment income, the closer we are to retirement, because the more of that income we keep, and then the closer we are to replacing our employment income. So sometimes though, like I said at the beginning, we find some clients are really just too focused on their employment income. Oh, I paid $80,000 in tax, income tax last year. How do I get rid of it? And then almost no focus on, okay, but if I'm investing in property or shares, how am I going to make sure that I pay as little income and capital gains tax and land tax on those investments? For PAYG employees, we're going to talk about there's a couple of strategies they can implement to reduce their tax. But then beyond that, it's rats and mice sort of stuff. It's the sort of stuff that might save you a couple of hundred dollars in tax. It's really not big ticket items, and it's not going to change the investment strategy.
So one tax strategy PAYG earners tend to consider is negative gearing. Now, I know some marketers and some advisors who probably are well-meaning but don't get it right say, hey, you better buy an investment property before the end of the financial year so you can negatively gear. I know we both think that you've got to buy the best asset you can, and negative gearing isn't an investment strategy. It's really just the way you finance the property during a period of time.
It's a positive consequence of making an investment. It's a possible positive consequence of making an investment, but not the reason for it. Bang on, Michael. And over the years, I've received phone calls or inquiries from clients saying, Stuart, I've got to go and buy an investment property because I paid too much tax last year. And I say, no, you've got to buy an investment property because you want to build wealth. And if it happens to save you tax, then of course, that's a good thing. Now, negative gearing, while interest rates are 2 or 3%, it's not substantial. It's not as substantial as it used to be, which is good, because I think it invites people to really focus on the fundamental reasons for investing, which we've just elaborated on, which is building wealth. In today's dollars, negative gearing is really not saving you a lot of money. But of course, interest rates can probably only rise, and a lot of talk about the bank's funding costs, variable rate funding costs will increase over the next few years. So variable rates are probably on the rise, but not maybe to a great extent. And the other thing we need to consider is there is a lot of noise around limitation of negative gearing. At the moment, there's no limit. If you can go and negatively gear 20 properties and reduce your income, your taxable income to zero, you can in fact do that. Now, obviously, the Labor Party in the 19 federal election took the policy of banning negative gearing, and that didn't work out well for them. But I think probably over the next 10 years, there's probably a reasonable probability that it will be limited, either to maybe one or two properties, or to a probably better to limit it to a dollar amount, which means that it's a bit of a word of warning, I think, for people that are too focused on negative gearing, is that whilst it's here today, it might not be here today in its current format forever. And so therefore, you certainly want to be investing in the right property and not hoping that income tax savings alone will help you build wealth, because they won't.
Well, another way people are wanting to save tax is buying properties with depreciation schedules attached to them. In other words, now it's new properties. In the past, it used to be established properties. And while there are tax benefits from that, if you're not buying a property that's going to grow in value, or if that's already built into the cost of the property because you're paying marketer's fees, or you're buying in one of those high-rise towers, which isn't going to increase in value for a decade, that's false economy also.
Spot on. I mean, a big depreciation deduction is an indication that you have a large dwelling value, and then potentially a proportionately a smaller land value, when we know land appreciates and building depreciate. So it's great you get a deduction for it, but really what you're getting a deduction for is the amount of wealth you lost in that year because your asset is now worth less because it's depreciated in value. So again, I think it's probably a perfect example to show why chasing tax benefits ultimately might save you a little bit of tax this year, but in the long run, it costs you a lot in terms of opportunity costs from a wealth building perspective.
The other thing people don't realise is that if they end up selling their property, and unfortunately we know a lot of investors do because they just don't get it right, you've got to return back the depreciation you've claimed when you work out your capital gains tax.
Yeah, it reduces the cost base, Michael. And the perverse thing is, even if you didn't claim the depreciation, the law says you have to reduce the cost base by the depreciation that you would have otherwise been entitled to claim up to the last 5 years. So even if I hold this property and I've never claimed a dollar depreciation, but I have been able to, I need to still reduce my cost base. So, I mean, the ATO is pretty aggressive in that regard. So what you might save in income tax deductions, you'll pay on the other side in terms of higher capital gains tax.
What about superannuation, Stuart? Where do you put that into the planning scheme of things?
Well, I mean, there's some great tax income tax benefits of contributing additional into super. And as of 1 July 2021, after 1 July 2021, we all can contribute up to $27,500 a year and claim a tax deduction for it. Now, that includes our employer contributions, what's called superannuation guarantee contributions. So you've got to take that into account. So if your employer's already putting 10 grand in, well, then you can put in another $17,500 if you want to. If your income is less than $250,000, then those contributions are only taxed at a flat rate of 15%. So whereas if you took the income in your personal name, you're going to pay maybe 39 or 47.5% depending on what income tax bracket you're in. So it can provide some great savings, but notwithstanding that, it obviously forces you to save. And if you're investing, if your super is in a good low-cost, high-returning fund, then in the long run, that's going to work really well. But the one downside, Michael, is that we can't access it until we're 60 or beyond, and potentially that might change in the future as well. So we're sort of locking that money away, and for some people, that might not necessarily be a wise thing to do. Perhaps a wiser thing to do for some people is to take that income, pay the tax in order to be able to reduce debt, particularly while interest rates are low. So horses for courses, great tax-saving mechanism. But like many things, moderation is typically the key. So not making any super contributions is probably wrong, but putting all your wealth inside super is probably equally inappropriate in most circumstances.
Well, that makes sense. So if we're looking at ways that we can minimise our tax legally, what about investment returns? How can we minimise our tax on those?
Well, I think we've got to think about how those investments will behave and what sort of tax attributes they will have over a long period of time. Now, of course, saving a dollar in tax today is worth a lot more to me than saving a dollar in 20 years. So we can't be too long-term focused because obviously the time value of money we'd much prefer, or at least we need to wait, you know, shorter-term tax savings first rather than long-term tax savings, but it is important to look over a long period of time. Now, for some people, particularly with property, their strategy might be able to, you know, go and buy a portfolio of property and never sell them. And if that's the case, of course, things can always change, but if that's the case, then maybe we would have less consideration about capital gains tax and be more considered about income and land tax. But again, we can't be too focused on negative gearing because if we hold the property long enough, at some point, it's going to produce a taxable income. So, Michael, the best way I think is to sort of build a bit of a financial model and see how these things behave over time. And then you can work out, or it helps inform you about how you might want to own those assets. And really, at the end of the day, the owner is the one that's going to dictate the tax outcomes. There's not a lot you can do. If you get the ownership wrong, there's not a lot of tax planning you're able to do after the fact. So, for example, if I've got a client that has five investment properties and all those investment properties is in one spouse's name, when they enter into retirement, they're going to pay a lot more land tax, they're going to pay a lot more income tax, and that doesn't make a lot of sense. So it's about sort of leveling out, and you might consider how assets are spread amongst spouses. And then the other probably obvious one might be using a family trust to give you some tax flexibility down the track.
Sure. So what we really have to think about is the long term, because what works now and what you need now is going to be very different as you build an asset base, as you get older. So there's always that balancing act. Do I spend money today setting up a trust structure, an ownership structure that will cost a little bit more upfront and also annual compliance costs, but it's going to give me benefits in the long term? That's really where you need independent advice. But another thing that's made the news a bit, especially with the tax changes that have been implemented in Victoria, is land tax. I know it's one thing property investors hate. Look, to me, it is a wealth tax. And if people say to me, well, Michael, I don't want to buy more property, I don't want to pay more land tax, I think there's a couple of things I suggest to them, Stuart. One is, if I was going to open up a retail shop, I'd go to the Chadstone Shopping Centre, the biggest shopping centre in the Southern Hemisphere. I'd pay the highest rent, I'd pay the highest outgoings so that I have the best foot traffic so my business can run well. And if you're going to own a property investment business, you should actually own the best assets you can in the best locations you can. And land tax, unfortunately, is a cost of doing business. But it's one of those interesting taxes, Stuart. It's a tax deductible tax.
Yeah, it's an archaic tax. That's what it is, Michael. It was introduced in Victoria in 1877. I know both you and I weren't born then, but I'm not a big fan of it, of course. I think there's other taxes, other sort of consumption taxes that are fairer and probably work better. At the end of the day, though, it is what it is, and it's probably not going away anytime soon. There's only really two things you can really do around land tax. In some states, depending on your property holdings, it might be better not to have it in own property in a trust, because trusts typically attract higher rates of land tax. Now, that's just a generalist comment. In some situations, putting property in multiple trusts can work to minimize tax, even end up paying less tax than what you would pay in individual names. And then having some geographical diversification is probably the strongest way you can minimize land tax. So having assets in various states rather than putting it all in one state. Of course, there's some pros and cons associated with doing that, but it's worthy of some consideration.
Well, just to make it clear, land tax is a state-based tax and every state has different tax rates and each has its own tax threshold. So that's why buying something in a different state starts off in a new tax threshold. And as you were suggesting, if it's in one ownership structure, it could be in your wife's name or a company or trust controlled by your wife. That could be seen as a different entity and have its own tax threshold. Having said that, you need to get correct advice on that. And again, it's not the reason to invest or not invest in a particular location, but it's something to take into consideration. The other tax that annoys property investors, I guess it annoys most people, is capital gains tax. Now, you and I both agree that we should be building assets in the long term and not buying to sell, but there are times when you need to sell. So my strategy is not never sell, it's seldom sell. And sometimes you've got to sell to lower your loan to value ratios. It's one of the strategies we use to get people into a better cash flow position as they get closer to their retirement age.
Yeah, so, and that's why it's really important to have a plan and to plan these things out from the beginning, because if I know I need to sell an asset for a particular client, then I'm going to really weight my consideration to minimizing capital gains tax to a much greater extent. And, you know, the income tax and perhaps even the land tax along the way is of a lesser concern. So putting that property in a self-managed super fund, it might be a good situation. I've got a client that's entering into retirement over the next 12 months. They've got a property in a self-managed super fund. They can sell it and not pay any CGT. It's going to help them tremendously. In fact, it's one of the key elements associated with their strategy. If it's not super, then maybe a family trust. And particularly, you've got to consider, you know, how many other beneficiaries do you have? Do you have self-funded retiree parents that you can distribute to, any other adult children or young adults, I should say, that are over 18 that don't have taxable income, so people at uni and so forth. So if you start thinking about, you know, are there ways in which we can utilize a family trust to minimize CGT, then obviously the more that we can retain from that those sale proceeds, then the more effectual that sale will be, the more we'll have left over to reduce debt, to improve our cash flow position. So again, I think it probably reminds us that, you know, the benefit of some forward planning to understand what the strategy looks like allows us to think about these things before it's too late. Because obviously, if you're going to leave it until the year before you retire to start thinking about it, obviously there's nothing you can do to change the ownership structure of property at that time.
So Stuart, up to now, what we've been talking about applies just as well to self-employed people as it does to POIG earners, but there are obviously a lot more options available if you're self-employed or you run a business.
Yeah, spot on. If you have business income as opposed from personal services income, so your income's generated from a business rather than your own personal exertion, then you can distribute that income. You've got a lot more flexibility around distributing that income. Plus also, if you operate that business in a corporate environment, so in a company, the company tax rate's reducing to 25%. So, you know, potentially that leaves you a lot more after-tax dollars in order to build your wealth. And you can do that depending on your business income structure, but you can do that either using family trusts or a corporate beneficiary of those family trusts, and potentially preserve your maximum tax rate at 25%, which I think we would all agree would be a good outcome compared to a PYG employee with a high income. They're paying 47%, only 53% left over to reinvest, as opposed to someone that's running their own business, potentially 75% left over to invest. It's far more effectual.
Well, that strategy you suggested a moment ago about having a corporate beneficiary to a family trust sometimes is called a bucket company. It's legal if you document everything correctly and you do everything correctly. Something worth asking your accountant about if you're in that position. But I know you've also got a separate podcast about this. So tell us a little bit about the Holistic Accountant podcast, Stuart.
So it was a podcast that we've got, there's 8 episodes in series 1. If it's popular, we'll do another series, but we thought we'd develop a podcast that is really aimed at individuals that are self-employed and to really help them understand what sort of structures and what sort of strategies they need to employ to really maximize their wealth after tax. So instead of typically an account will look at their role is maximizing that person's income after tax in any one particular year. And that's fine, but that's, I think, a much broader scope of saying, well, my role is to help you maximize your wealth after tax, which is then making sure you pay as little income tax along the way, but then also make sure you do something well with it. So, you know, your investment structure needs to be able to talk to your business income structure tax effectively so that you can make some really good decisions around that. So just Google the Holistic Accountant podcast and you'll be able to find it. It's on Apple and all the other areas where people listen to podcasts.
Well, my suggestion is not only to subscribe to, you actually don't use the word subscribe anymore. Apple have changed it because it doesn't cost anything. So follow the Holistic Accountant podcast, but I also suggest following Stuart's Investopoly podcast, which is great. Now, you share some of the thoughts we discuss in your podcast as well, but in a different way, and you've got a great blog as well. So since you enjoy podcasts, well, I hope you do because you're listening to this one, follow the Holistic Accountant podcast and Investopoly as well. Now, Stuart, we're talking about saving tax, not paying as much during your working life, but what are your thoughts about how you should consider tax in your retirement years?
You know, one of the problems with super, one of the concerns that people have with superannuation is that the government keeps changing all the rules. And then people become very skeptical about it. They don't want to put their retirement in the government's hands. And then the government changes rules, all of a sudden they can't retire. So a lot of people are skeptical about super. But I think that the closer we get to retirement, the less chance the government is actually going to change the rules on you. Typically, if they're going to change, for example, what's called the preservation rule, which means when you can access super, if they're going to change that and they're going to move that from 60 and maybe make it 67 to align with the age pension, for example, they're going to do that for people in their perhaps in their 20s today and younger. They won't do it for people that are in their 50s today. They'll give people plenty of warning, plenty of room, because obviously it would cause tremendous turmoil and it wouldn't be a very popular strategy. So as we get closer to super, then it becomes more clear about when we're going to be able to use super, how we can access it, and the tax benefits associated with it. So it is a very tax-effective environment. If you have each individual has $1.7 million or less, then you will pay zero tax. So really, if I've got a client that's approaching retirement and certainly approaching the age of 60 so they can access super, I will start thinking about how can we get as much money into super as possible. The other thing I want to think about then is what assets do we have left in personal names and what do the tax attributes look like? Will we be paying a lot of tax in retirement? Because we can earn about $20,000, $25,000 each. So for a couple, it's nearly $50,000 and we'll pay very, very little tax. So if we've got one or two properties in our personal name and still a little bit of debt, we should be fine. But if I end up with too much, no assets inside super and too much in one person's name, then it's going to be really tax ineffective at a time when you really want to be keeping as much of your passive income as possible because you're relying upon it to fund retirement. So I think probably in retirement, most people should aim to pay very, very little tax. I know the strategies that I put together see people paying almost zero tax, or if there's some tax, it's only a few, maybe even a few thousand dollars at most. That really should be the aim, and super is really a big component of that. And then also, I guess, playing around with your gearing levels to help you move more money inside super might be a good strategy in regards to that as well.
So I think in summary, what we've got to remember is that while it's nice to save tax and there are some ways of doing it, really it's more important, Stuart, to focus on your investment returns, earn more, and be prepared to pay a little bit of tax along the way.
And the other thing, Michael, one thing that we really need to remind ourselves is tax laws change. We can't come up with a really convoluted strategy that accommodates the tax rules as they are today, because obviously tomorrow they could change and it will completely unwind the strategy, particularly if we're heavily dependent on those rules continuing. You know, everything changes. So having too much focus on them won't necessarily produce better results in the long run because of that. And that's why at the end of the day, if we have great assets, the quality of our assets will determine our outcomes. They might be tax inefficient at times, but I'd much prefer to have really good quality assets and a terrible tax strategy than a great tax strategy and terrible assets, because I don't need a tax strategy if my assets are terrible, because they won't produce any capital gains or income. So it's really about focusing on the quality of the assets, then getting some really good long-term strategy advice and making sure that it's well-balanced, considering lots of different things, and tax is one of those things.
Well, I think one of the things you demonstrated today is your holistic approach to wealth creation. And so people may want to use your services as a tax advisor, as a financial advisor, mortgage broker, and you do that through ProSolution Private Clients. How can people find out a bit more about you?
Just Google ProSolution Private Clients or Stuart Weems or even Investopoly. There'll be plenty of links online that'll take you to my business. You'll be able to check out the blog and that'll share a few more thoughts on the way we think and maybe even read the book Investopoly, which I often recommend to people that are considering engaging our services, because it gives them a really good flavour for what we're about and how we think and how we invest. And certainly I'm easy to find and contact on the internet.
Sure. And of course, we'll leave a link in the show notes so you don't have to remember anything that Stuart just said other than he knows his stuff. So thank you so much for your time again, Stuart. Look forward to our next regular chat.
Thanks, Michael. It's my pleasure.
I hope my chat with Stuart gave you some ideas, some things to think about how to legally minimise your tax, and in other words, end up with more dollars in your pocket. But I've got some other resources that may help you as well. As a way of saying thank you for subscribing to my podcast, go to podcastbonus.com.au and I've got a bundle of ebooks and reports that you can add to your success library and learn a bit more about property, finance, tax and success. But if you also want to take advantage of the property markets and plan to become a successful property investor. And I think that's one of the themes that came through over and over again with my chat with Stuart today, that you've got to plan. It's not just going to happen. Despite the markets moving forward at the moment, not all properties are going to increase in value at the same rate. So you've got to plan to buy the right sort of properties, but you've also got to have a financial plan, a strategic plan, a tax and asset protection plan, as we said, an estate planning plan. On that basis, if you're wanting to get the right direction and guidance so that you get the results you're after, why not have a chat with my team at Metropole, who are a multi-award winning team with a depth of experience, and Ken Race in our wealth advisory division, my business partner, who's well regarded as Australia's leading property tax advisor, can advise you on the right ownership structures and legal tax minimisation methods as well. So why not go to metropole.com.au, find out about what we do, but it all starts with putting a strategic property plan together for you and your family and your future. It's bringing your future into the present so you can do something about it now. Go to metropole.com.au and you can find out about our services. I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I want to remind you that success requires luck and luck requires work. Now, I must give credit to this chat I'm about to have with you to my good friend Tom Cawley, who's the co-author of my book, Rich Habits, Poor Habits. And we were having a chat the other day and he reminded me of something he'd written about. You see, I believe the average person performs far below their abilities. They do what they have to do to survive, to get by. They avoid taking risks that could disrupt their lives. Most people are risk averse, aren't they? On the other hand, I've found, and Tom Cawley found in his Rich Habits, Poor Habits study, that true success is the byproduct of unleashing your innate abilities, exposing them to the light of day for everyone to see. But this requires risk. And taking that risk is a leap of faith in yourself and your abilities. And the problem is, most people don't ever do it. On the other hand, unleashing your innate abilities is really nothing more than just pursuing something you enjoy, something that brings you joy while you're engaging in those activities. But here's the problem. Oftentimes, exploiting your own innate abilities requires an enormous investment of your time before the investment begins to pay dividends. And because the investment doesn't produce immediate rewards, for many people, it ends up being a problem. Developing your innate abilities by hours of work, hours of daily practice, combined with daily reading to gain insight into the knowledge to perfect your abilities, it just requires too much work for the average person. Now, you've heard me say it before, luck comes when preparation meets opportunity. When you devote yourself to something that you're passionate about, you're engaging in activities that tap into your innate abilities. And by developing those abilities, and that takes time and investment of time, but by developing those and engaging in them over and over again, you're eventually going to become an expert. Developing expertise takes time. Some would say 5, 10, 15 years at a minimum. Often it takes longer. And there's no short-term payback. So this investment in yourself tees you up for success later in life. I found opportunities eventually present themselves. If, however, you're not prepared when an opportunity comes your way, then the opportunity passes you by. But if you are prepared, if you've done the hard work for many years, if you're ready for it, when that opportunity does come along, you're going to be ready to pounce. Now, many people call this fortuitous alignment of preparation and opportunity luck. But those who prepare their entire lives, those who invest in their abilities their entire lives, they become the beneficiaries of luck, of meeting preparation and opportunity. Now, we all have special innate abilities. Mine isn't in sport or in mechanical things, but I found what I'm good at. You've got to find what your inborn strengths are, what's hardwired in your DNA, and it's probably there right from birth. Your job in life is to find out what you're good at and devote yourself to it for the rest of your life. What you're good at is usually something that comes easier for you than to others. That's life's way of winking at you. Your strengths are cues for you to find your inborn, natural abilities. Find your strengths, devote your life to improving them, and luck will follow. Luck, of course, is the precursor to success. You can't become successful without luck. But in order for luck to occur, you've got to relentlessly develop those abilities so they become natural to you. In other words, you've got to invest the time and energy in perfecting them. Find your strengths, develop those strengths, and luck will follow. And once again, I want to say thanks to Tom Cawley for putting some of these words in my mind as we had a chat, and they're the sort of information that you're going to find in our regular Rich Habits, Poor Habits blogs on Property Update, and in my book, together with Tom, Rich Habits, Poor Habits, where we train you to start developing more of the habits of the wealthy, successful people and ditch some of your poor habits. Thanks for spending time listening to Stuart and me today. And if you got some benefit from it, and you know somebody else who'd get benefit from the holistic advice we gave about legally minimizing a tax, why not tell somebody about the Michael Yardney podcast? Or you can use the share button on the podcast app you're listening to. Of course, you can tell the whole world by leaving a review, as Commercial Agent did via Apple Podcasts, saying, "Best free financial education. This is by far the best content I've come across. It's an in-depth discussion that offers golden tips for personal development." Well, thank you so much, Commercial Agent, for leaving that review. And if I read out your review, just email me, michael@metropole.com.au, and I'd love to say thank you to you by gifting you one of my books. Now, I'll be back again real soon, but if you want to catch up with me in the meantime, just look for Michael Yardney on social media, or you can join my private Facebook group where every day I leave a chart or a tip or something exclusive that I don't leave elsewhere. Just go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group. I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?